Today is December 6, 2017, and this is episode number 440 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I am obscenely, some have even suggested that I am unseemly smug about my choices for Christmas presents. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on, what am I doing? Yeah, shoot us a note, whatever. Actually, you know what? Do the thing. Go to the Facebook group.
We have a Facebook group?
We do. Facebook.com/groups/contextmachine.
Hold on.
Where our listeners have been helping us... while you're writing that down, have been helping us with topics and arguing back with us and making suggestions for the show. And we very much appreciate it. And we'd love it if you did it over at facebook.com/groups/contextmachine. Got it.
There we go. Got it.
Excellent.
Yeah. So your smugness.
Yes, yes, I'm quite smug.
Based on my insider research.
Insider knowledge.
My insider knowledge.
Of Christmas present choices.
Yeah, I feel totally confident in backing your smugness.
Oh, well, thank you very much, man. I appreciate that.
Sure.
I appreciate that.
I could elaborate on that, but, well, you know.
Yeah, then I'd have to kill you.
Right. And everyone else listening to the show because.
Right.
Secrets.
Secrets. S-E-K-R-E-T. Secret. Secret.
Have you been using the New York Times and Bloomberg editors again?
Yeah, not sure what's going on with their copy editing. I mean, like, you know, we have copy editing mistakes at the Mac Observer. We have a slightly smaller budget than Bloomberg and the New York Times. Slightly.
Yeah, but we have never fired our copy editing staff. So, you know, there's that. In our defense, we don't have one to fire.
Right. Right. By the way, we're coming to you through the magic of Discord as opposed to Skype.
Yes. The bottom line is we got really sick of the way Skype is changing their app so that there's just constantly a hiss.
Yes.
And so we fixed it.
We fixed it by going somewhere else.
That's right. And
yeah, I've been using Discord a long time. It's mostly it's built as a gamer platform, a gamer communication platform. But what's been happening is that podcasters have discovered that it does voice really well.
Yeah, at this point, it does it much better than Skype. Right. And when I did that command Q on the Skype window, it was cathartic.
Yeah, that's good. I like no noise. Speaking of which, you may hear some noise today. I've got workmen. I don't have workmen, but there are workmen working on the house in which I live.
Oh, I just assumed that you had commandeered the interns and were making them do maintenance on the house.
I'm pretty sure they're still in the closet where you left them.
This explains why I haven't seen them lately.
Yeah, exactly. 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 All right. So in the meanwhile, while I was being smugly pleased with myself to an unseemly degree,
yes,
Tim Cook was off in China.
I'm kind of baffled a little bit about the whole China thing and the way that played out and ultimately what it means.
Yeah, let's get the name of the conference. He was at a Chinese-sponsored conference that was called the China's World Internet Conference. The not at all accurately named World Internet Conference. And part of this thing with this conference is China advocating something that they call cyber sovereignty, which is the right of countries to decide what's on the internet in their countries, which is
that
precisely
sounds
not
ominous.
Yeah, it really does. And of course, China has controlled what's on the Chinese internet for a very long time. Net neutrality isn't even a joke. It's just non-existent.
Why do they even feel like they need to justify what they're doing? They haven't to date.
Well, because they want other countries doing it so that they take less heat from it. They want other companies, other countries to go, oh, yeah, hey, that's a great idea. Right? That's why they're doing this. So, and by advocating this this position, they're basically looking for the rest of the world to go ahead and sign off on their control. And
so they're like a needy date that wants validation.
Yes.
All right. Well.
And yet, Tim Cook was there, and so was Sundar Pichai.
Mm-hmm.
Who is Google CEO.
Pichai.
Thank you. Goodness gracious. Yeah, Pichai, of course, who is the CEO of Google, which is Alphabet's subsidiaries.
Company that you may have heard of.
Yeah, right. You may have heard of it. But it's like, you know, the reason why Larry Page isn't CEO of Google is because he's CEO of Alphabet. And Google is their subsection that actually deals with Google and a few other things.
Right. And if you're not familiar with what Google is or Alphabet, go Google it and you'll figure it out.
Exactly. Exactly. So they were there, and I think there might have been a couple of other business people there. And, you know, Tim Cook has come under some criticism. But this topic, by the way, was
a keynote.
He did give a keynote. This topic, just to give credit where it's due, this topic was suggested in our Facebook group by Frank Morales Cruz.
Thanks, Frank. You rock.
Indeed. We appreciate that. And I have a lot of very mixed feelings on this. So, you know, what Tim has said in the past is, let me find this quote. I'm going to find this quote. We believe
the children are the future.
He basically is saying that, that as much as censorship sucks, being involved in the Chinese market is better for Chinese people than not being involved in the market.
Okay. But if they're involved in the market in the way China wants or demands, which essentially keeps things the way it always has been for the Chinese people, is that helpful?
So he said this was not in relationship to this particular keynote address. He said, quote, "We strongly believe that participating in markets and bringing benefits to consumers is in the best interest of folks there and in other countries as well. We believe in engaging in governments even when we disagree."
Well, okay, so if you're engaging a government, then you're increasing the likelihood of having a dialogue with them. And I suppose that means there's a higher chance of being able to sway the government into acting in a friendlier way to their population.
Yeah, which isn't going to happen. This is so interesting. Like, you know, Apple, Google, Microsoft, they're all in this impossible position. They're all in this impossible position because if they kowtow to Chinese censorship demands, they're part of the problem, and mm-hmm. they're sacrificing their principles and you know, theoretical Western ideals, you know, that theoretically their leadership theoretically, agrees to.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't, they get kicked out of China and they're not there. So they lose all the money, but then they're leaving the market to Chinese companies that are thoroughly and completely beholden to China's government, which is what Tim Cook is alluding to. And I don't know, but if they're doing the kowtowing, if they're obeying censorship requirements, how is that in any way benefiting Chinese consumers who don't have access to free information?
I agree completely. And by being at this event and speaking in a positive way, or at least phrasing things the way that Tim did, it kind of sounds like Tim's presence.
They're endorsing the censorship. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so here's another wrinkle. So, you know, Google made the right choice, right? When Google was told to censor Google in China, they shut down shop and redirected searches to the Google China site to Google Hong Kong, at which China has allowed them to get away with. But the reality is that Chinese search is not controlled by Google at all. They're not really even a bit player. It's controlled by Chinese firms. Microsoft is there. Microsoft chose to comply to be complicit in censorship demands.
Wow.
And we bagged on Microsoft and we've praised Google for doing that. Right. And, but here Apple is doing the same thing. So recently they pulled out those VPN apps, 674 VPN apps that weren't complying with Chinese censorship laws or allowed consumers to bypass Chinese censorship laws. And Apple pulled those and they took criticism and they said, basically we have to obey local laws, which is true. They have to obey local laws or pull up shop. Like Google did.
Or have their shop shut down.
One way or another, yeah, they're gone. So, all right, so anyway, here's that added wrinkle I mentioned. If Apple did the principal thing and shut down in China, losing billions, but it would be the principal thing to do. It would be the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. My question is it actually the right thing to do? Because what happens is the Chinese market then is left fully to Chinese companies, which get to thrive and use the added profits that Apple isn't sucking up to further develop and become better competitors.
This is a really hard place to be.
Very hard place. It's a hard place for all of these companies to be, all these Western companies to be in. It's a very hard place to be in. You've got shareholders saying that we don't care. We don't give a crap. We just want money. Profits, profits, profits. Mm-hmm. You've got the right and wrong thing to do, which Tim Cook tends to at least publicly talk about the right thing to do all the time. Mm-hmm. We've got freedom of information. We've got censorship. We've got Chinese control. We've got competitors. We've got, like, there's just all of these different factors. And I don't know what the right thing to do is. I mean, does Tim Cook believe that being in China, even if their ability to offer consumers free and unfettered services is slowly chipped away at, and sometimes not even slowly, does he believe that these people having Apple devices still gives them more access to information?
Possibly. Or maybe there's another angle that Apple's going at here, which is they have a lot of products that are made in China. And it would be a real shame if something happened to their export options and there was a big bottleneck the next time a new iPhone came out.
Right. And that is always a possibility. It is always a possibility. The reality is I think that China would be just fine with Apple manufacturing its products there and not selling them there. China would be just fine with that. China get that actually might be the best situation for China.
That would be the win-win for China.
Yeah, they get the people employed, but the profits from sale of the devices aren't happening, right? So, like, you know, like this Western company wouldn't be profiting off of a Chinese yuan.
Right. At that point, it becomes black market businesses that make the money.
Yes, this is true in counterfeits. Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, that's already a problem for Apple in China anyway. But then the other side is I've maintained for a while now that Apple can't really win in China. The bigger Apple gets, the more China has a reason to clamp down on them, because China wants Chinese companies to be at the forefront of technology. A lot of Chinese economic policy and political policy is geared right now towards boosting native Chinese technology companies.
So is China Apple's Kobayashi Maru test?
Yeah.
That's not reassuring.
Mm-mm. It's the better Apple does, the more incentive China has to clamp down on them. And then that's not even, of course, counting political turmoil and political rivalry and political competition with the United States in terms of the government. So if there's a dust up between the Chinese government and the U.S. government, Apple is a quick go-to target for the Chinese government. Right? To punish Apple in order to get at the U.S. You know, these sort of tit for tat things happen all the time. They've happened for decades between the U.S. and any other number of countries, but certainly in China in the last couple of decades. And the reason why it's happening with Apple now is simply because Apple is such a big company. You know, it doesn't happen with automobile manufacturers anymore because LOL automobiles. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, technology companies are the big deal.
All right. So at this point, I'm starting to feel like Tim's presence at China's World Internet Conference was more a tactical move to just buy time.
I don't know. Maybe. I had wondered if Apple was just playing the game until the current premier's 5-year term was up. Mm-hmm. But he was just basically canonized, and his words were, you know, put up alongside Mao Zedong's words in terms of the Communist Party. I forget the exact terminology for this stuff, but basically his words were blessed to not to be questionable, and are alongside Mao Zedong's you know, comments or positions or whatever the heck they do. And it's assuring him probably another 5-year term. So, because the previous regime was actually very open to Chinese, to Western technology companies, because they wanted to be able to learn from them. Which makes a lot of sense. So they did some learning. Right. You know, Apple is about the only company that maintains a close degree of control over over their manufacturing inventions and whatnot. Even there, there's still Chinese managers and people and engineers who are using them. So, you know, they are learning from them. Mm-hmm. Other companies, you know, just basically, you know, they hand over their plans to companies like some, including the same companies that are making stuff for Apple, and say, make this for us. And and so Chinese companies have been learning from Western companies quite a bit. Yeah, by learning from, I mean stealing from, and also just straight up learning. Yeah. And now that they've done the learning, the current guy his angle has been to protect and foster and promote the development of these internal companies, so that they can go toe to toe with the Western companies someday on the global market.
All right. So is Tim doing the old keep your friends close but your enemies closer tactic?
Maybe. That would be the most benign, I think, interpretation of him being there that I can come up with.
Yeah, it just seems like this is not ultimately a winning scenario.
Right. Okay. So to be, to me, being in China is not really tenable. And don't forget that you've got people like Steve Bannon, former Trump advisor, Steve Bannon, who believes that, who strongly believes that, that we are headed into a world war with China. And that that guides much of his, you know, when he's not freaked out about Muslims, he is freaked out about an impending war with China.
This is relevant. Like a healthy way to live.
It's probably not. But this is relevant because Steve Bannon's worldview is not his alone. So, you know, what happens to Apple if that future actually comes to be? Apple's toast, by the way, for those keeping score at home. Yeah, the world's toast, but you know, whatevs.
It's not, not just Apple.
So it's quite the mess. And to be fair, Tim Cook did not specifically endorse Chinese censorship. He didn't actually mention it. Instead, he promoted, or he endorsed, I always forget this current Chinese premier's name. What is his name? Whatever. So he endorsed the current guy's vision of a faster, more robust internet within China. So he wasn't specifically talking about censorship, but the problem is that censorship is part and parcel of the entire thing.
Yeah. Okay. So he gave a positive keynote presentation and just skipped over the dirty, ugly parts.
Yes.
Which is probably the best option he had open to him.
Well, he could not have gone.
That probably wasn't a better option.
Well, or he wouldn't be there, at least from his perspective. That was probably, I mean, you know, don't forget that he is beholden to shareholders.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. This just doesn't feel good.
Sundar Pichai did not deliver a keynote, but he was on a panel to discuss the digital economy.
Yeah, and I heard that it was basically unattended because there was some screw up and people didn't know the panel was happening.
Yeah, maybe I didn't catch that, but let's go with that. Sure. So anyway, it's a mess. It's a mess. China's a mess. Chinese censorship is disgusting and abhorrent. Apple participating in that is abhorrent to me. But I do wonder how it benefits anyone for Apple to not be competing in China. But, you know, is that just a slippery slope of compromises? It's like, it's better for us to be here, so we'll do this. Well, it's better for us to be here, so now we'll do this. Oh, it's better for us to be here, so now we'll do this.
Yeah, of course it's totally a slippery slope of compromises. And the farther away you get from your initial standards and goals, the harder it is to get back there.
Yep.
Yeah. Well.
Fun times, huh?
Yeah. I'm sticking with Kobayashi Maru for this one.
Yes, I have to agree. All right, so let's move. What's our time?
We're at 25 minutes.
All right, well, so let's move on to something vaguely happier.
Okay,
and talk about this interesting. This was a topic suggested by Quentin James in our Facebook group. Yeah, it'd be facebook.com/group/contextmachine. We really would like you to join over there and take part in the conversation.
Yeah, because we want to hang out with the cool kids, which are you.
We do. Exactly. So he pointed us to a little bit of news about Sonos and IKEA working on a collaboration. What's up with this?
That's just a weird one. I mean, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, so where's the benefit for Sonos? Because they are what I would consider more of a premium product. And IKEA is more of an economy product. And I say that as someone that that is so glad that there's one IKEA near me and another one being built close to me.
Good Lord.
I know.
So yeah, premium design, economy quality. That's how I'd put it.
Yeah, so.
And their whole goal has been to democratize good design, which I love. I don't buy personally IKEA stuff anymore, but I appreciate their effect on the world of furniture. Well, because there's a lot less sucky design because of them.
Yeah, and I'm glad to have IKEA here in Colorado, because the couch that I have right now, I have an IKEA couch and I really like it a lot. And my other option was going to be going to this company called American Furniture Warehouse. And those of you that know that name, I know exactly what you all just did. It was, you start shaking your head and you go,
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
So here's the deal. This makes a lot of sense for Sonos.
How so?
Because if Sonos can deliver an IKEA collaboration product, some kind of version of Sonos's products that are tailor-made for IKEA, they will be in retail locations with a crap ton of traffic. This will be huge exposure to them, for them.
Do they need that exposure?
Sure, absolutely. Of course they do.
Did they need exposure at the expense of their image? And here's where I'm going with this. Sonos, they make quality audio products. I mean, that's the image that they're presenting. So this is a premium product. The image I have of them in IKEA is a discount product. And so that means something that's lower quality than what they're currently offering. Is that a space that they want to go into?
Well, it depends on if they actually do that. What if they don't do that? What if they instead deliver the same Sonos product, but in IKEA designed enclosures? I don't expect Sonos to compromise on the quality of what they're doing.
I hope they don't compromise. All right, so the idea you just proposed, Sonos equipment in IKEA cabinets, maybe it's something where it's cabinets designed for Sonos products. So it's not like you're buying the Sonos cabinet at IKEA. You're buying the cabinet that IKEA makes specifically to fit specific Sonos devices.
Well, they would come built that way.
And
I mean, they would come built. I mean, like, you know, they would manufacture
right
Sonos products using IKEA.
Oh, okay. So now what I'm thinking is, and just as an idea, they make the furniture to hold the Sonos products. It's not like you're buying the IKEA Sonos speaker, which is built into some sort of cabinet. You have Sonos speakers here. Come by the Sonos.
That's silly. The stand furniture is specially designed to hold. I mean, like, there's nothing particular about that. Doesn't make any sense. That makes no sense. I'm not understanding you, or.
I can see a partnership where you buy Sonos products wherever you buy them. And then you go and buy IKEA's specially designed furniture to hold and go with your Sonos products.
Yeah, but they could do it. But the thing is that, I mean, like, well, look at that flat surface. It holds that Sonos speaker better than another flat surface. And that, I mean, that, right? I mean, that's, you don't need special equipment to hold IKEA speakers.
No, but you could buy a bookshelf that has a special cutout just for a Sonos speaker, so that the speaker blends in more. I don't know. I'm trying to find ways to make this a palatable idea to me.
Well, so, all right. So then why not go back to my Sonos product that with an enclosure designed by IKEA?
Yeah. Okay. So I guess what I'm saying there is with that idea, maybe they'd be things you buy separately instead of as a package. Go buy your speakers at Sonos. Go buy the special cabinet for it at IKEA.
Well,
I don't know. The part that I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around is why Sonos would want to put their products in IKEA if they're not going to be lowering the prices on their devices. And if they're lowering the prices on their devices, then that tells me that they're going to make special versions just for IKEA. And then I get concerned about losing the audio quality of a Sonos product. I figured it out. I don't want to see Sonos compromise themselves just to be in IKEA. There we go. Man, that took a long time for me to work through it, but
fair enough. Just did it. I imagine that they could sell that they could sell their products branded for IKEA at the same prices, and that it would be that's not impossible for IKEA to sell Sonos stuff at retail. That's not impossible at all.
No, but the track record so far is when they've done their partnerships with other companies, like to do the wireless chargers and now to do their smart home lights, those are sold at a lower price than competing products in other stores.
All right, well, I guess we will have to see.
We will. And what I'm hoping is that we don't see any sort of compromise in what Sonos is doing.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being my therapist on that one.
You're welcome, I think.
Yeah, my check's in the mail.
Excellent. Perfect. So we've got, oh yeah. What do you think of this pop-up archive thing?
Pop-up archive. Well, that one seems kind of interesting to me. And the idea that Apple might actually be showing podcasts some love, that's a little surprising based on the way they've treated podcasts over the past few years. Am I right in the way I'm interpreting what pop-up does? And what they do is they analyze the audio recordings, and then they develop or build from that a searchable database. So then you can search through an audio podcast for specific terms without having to sit there and like just fast forward and hope you catch the right thing.
Yeah. So they're doing what is the name? So first of all, Apple supposedly bought this company.
Right.
Probably where we should start.
Okay. And so what we have from Apple as the confirmation is their usual non-confirmation, where they say they buy smaller companies from time to time.
From time to time, yeah. Why am I not finding our TMO article?
Oh, would you like it?
Yeah, I would.
Here, I've got a link for it right here.
Sweet.
We should totally put that in the show notes.
Is it drenched in sausages?
Yes, but they're tasty, tasty sausages.
Excellent. We will have this article in the show notes. I like the way the guy who actually broke the story put it. Apple, long the dominant hands-off steward of the podcast universe, has acquired a technology dedicated to increasing the knowability and sortability of the hundreds of thousands of shows distributed through its Apple podcast platform.
Okay, so now, how are they going to implement this?
Well, that's a good question. Would it be, say, a standalone product? Would it be, a feature built into Apple's podcast player? Probably.
Or a Siri thing?
Could be a, sure. I would imagine it would be Siri accessible. So one of the things you could do with it is you could sort podcasts that talk about China. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry about that.
You forgot to put your phone face down, didn't you?
Yeah, I picked it up earlier and then forgot to put it back face down. So, find podcasts that mention the Black Angels, one of my favorite bands.
Okay.
Or find podcasts that point out that the Game of Thrones books are much better than the TV show. Right. And so you could sort podcasts by content. You could sort and not by like the show, but by individual episodes.
Sure.
And so you could sort podcasts by what's in them. And that's what he's talking about, increasing the knowability of a podcast. Because right now you've got millions of words being recorded and disseminated, but the vast majority of them are not heard and will never be heard and will never be heard again. Maybe they're listened to the first time and they're just gone.
Now that you say that, I'm sad.
Sure. And take that another step forward. So you have a lot of podcasts that are like you remember, God, I know we said something she put it this way. Mm-hmm. Right? So you could actually search for that term, that quote that you remember. So that you can go back and listen to it again, either because you found it insightful or because you actually want to write a letter and tell those idiot podcasters how stupid they are. Mm-hmm.
And luckily, we never have to worry about that with our show.
Are you just not listening to us?
I don't have any way to search our show, so I don't know.
Fair enough.
All right. I love the idea of taking this massive amount of content that is potentially full of a lot of really useful information and making it into something that can be searched the same way that, well, or in a similar fashion to the way that we search for other content online. I mean, using a search engine like Google, I can go and look for different types of articles that cover whatever topic I'm interested in. It would be really cool if I could do the same thing with podcasts.
To be fair, look to Google is either already working on this also or will be working on this.
My guess is they're already working on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I assume they were. It's actually kind of surprising that Google hadn't already bought this company. Maybe they bought another company and we don't know about it. But maybe their internal engineers have been working on it all along.
Yeah.
There's no way that Google has ignored the fact that there's all this content being produced that they can't
that they're not parcel exploiting out. Yet.
Yeah, that they're not exploiting.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking it's kind of a cool idea, and I hope that we're interpreting Apple's plans accurately.
Right. We all we know is that we have a person who does have connections to the company who is saying it was Neiman Labs is the publication and Nicholas Kwa is the reporter who broke it. He said that Apple is doing this. We know that the company has shut down its services, which is a hallmark for most, but not all Apple purchases. Mm-hmm. And we know that Apple responded with their boilerplate, yep, we buy companies every once in a while, message.
Yeah, you put all those pieces together, and that is as close as we can get to an assurance that Apple owns this company as we can get without actually having someone at Apple say yes.
Right. At the same time, this could be an acquihire. Maybe they want the engineers and don't want the technology. I doubt that.
That could be too. It's something that crossed my mind, because if you have engineers that have been working on systems for being able to get the meaning from words, then that could be really useful for Siri.
It could be super useful for Siri, for sure. But my guess is they want the technology that that these guys have, and that it's probably for podcasts, which is, you know, one of the points I made in my piece was that podcasts have, to me, have long felt like one of those things that Apple either launched or embraced and then forgot about.
Well, the reason it feels that way is because they embraced it and then forgot about it.
Seemingly. This purchase suggests that's not necessarily the case.
Or maybe they found podcasts behind the couch and were like, hey, I remember these. This is kind of cool. Let's do something with this.
Pretty.
Yeah.
Because as it is, you know, like Apple launched enhanced podcasts where you can add, you know, graphic content and do special things with chapters. Mm-hmm. And then killed it.
Right. And then the whole chapter thing ended up eventually getting rolling into MP3.
Right.
But yeah, still Apple, I guess championed or pioneered some of this technology and then just totally abandoned it.
Yeah.
Which fits with their pattern over the years.
It does.
Yeah, it feels so very Google like that.
It kind of does. Apple tends to abandon stuff. Google actually kills it. There's a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, looking at you, Pages.
Yeah.
Keynote. Numbers.
And then on the Google side, looking at you, Reader.
Yeah, all of the services. Yeah. All right, so one way or another, it's an interesting acquisition by Apple. I hope that it results in something that's cool. Turning the world's body of podcasts into something that's searchable and sortable and therefore knowable is super cool.
I agree.
I've got an idea for you.
Okay.
Can you imagine running like all of the world's podcasts or just running the Apple Context Machine through TextArt?
Oh, wow.
Right?
That would be kind of cool.
Right? So TextArt, for those who we've mentioned it before, TextArt is this really, really cool technology from back in 2001. And it's still out there, sort of. I'm going to textarc.org.
It is still out there?
It is still out there, yeah. It's a Java technology, and it hasn't been updated for a long time. And so what they do is that they would take a book, and they would run it through the TextArc. And the TextArc would show you all of the connections that words have to each other. So for instance, it puts all of the words around the outer edge of the arc. It actually makes a circle more than an arc. Mm-hmm. Right. It's all of the words in order and makes this big ring. And then inside the ring, words that are repeated more than however many times you want to count it. And it throws out words like, you know, of and the and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the more often they're repeated, the closer they go to the center. But they're also pulled each time the it's mentioned, it's pulled to that portion of the story. That's why you have the words written around the circle. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the more often a word is repeated, the closer to the center it gets and the brighter it gets.
Right.
Okay, so the point here, and if you touch one of those words, you can actually see the connections to the story from all, like, you know, like rays shoot out from that word to show you all the different places in the story where that word is in the text.
That's really cool. It'd be cool to do that with shows, yeah.
Yeah. And the point is to show connections. The point, like, so for instance, I interviewed the guy. I did a pretty big story on this back in the day. I'll stick a link to that in the show notes too.
That was a long time ago, but I remember.
It was a very, very long time ago. And it wasn't 2001. It was probably 2003. And they were selling prints, by the way, back at the time. And I ended up buying one for my then girlfriend for Alice in Wonderland, mm-hmm. which was her favorite book. We'll actually use it as an example of something that you might actually be able to use the text arc for. So he asked me, it's like, you know, who do you think is a major character in Alice in Wonderland? Or Through the Looking Glasses, or.
So I'm assuming you said Alice?
No, I said the White Rabbit.
Okay.
And because I thought the White Rabbit was, you know, a major character, because I haven't actually read the book. But if you looked on the text arc, the White Rabbit is minor. He's hardly mentioned. He's all like, he's towards the edge, meaning that he was only in one section of the book. And his name is not very big.
Yeah, well, the White Rabbit, his job was to get Alice down into Wonderland, essentially.
Right, and then he's gone.
And then he's gone.
Right. So I didn't know that. So it's a text arc can be a way of understanding any given body of text and to see the way that words are connected. And it gives you possible understanding, additional understanding, and how those words are being used. I wanted the guy to run political speech. Sorry about the construction noise. I wanted the guy to run political speech through a text arc. And so that we could actually see some of the hidden themes in political speech. Like, you know, you take like, you know, all the speeches that a particular person has given. And you can see the themes that emerge from that.
That would just be fascinating.
That would be fascinating. And I mentioned it to the folks who were behind this and freaked out on me.
Really?
Freaked out on me. And he would never talk to me again. And this is a university project. The only thing I can ever figure out is that he was so freaked out about his work being politicized. It's either that or he actually disagreed with the political example that I gave him. Mm-hmm. At the time, but either way, stopped talking to me, didn't answer any more questions, and I just think this. I think the text arcs could be a massive educational academic tool for understanding speech. And in this particular case, if Apple is able to use this technology from Pop-Up Archive to turn all these podcasts into searchable words, well, then boom, well, like literally. You could get this greater understanding of speech.
That'd be really cool. You'd probably pick up on a lot of really interesting patterns from topics.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's kind of like a word cloud, right? This is very similar. Let me rephrase this. This a word cloud is to a text arc like checkers is to chess.
Okay, I'm with you.
Because, you know, it's so much more complicated. You don't just get the repetition, right? In a word cloud, the more a word is repeated, the bigger it is within the word cloud. And that's about it. But you don't get any other relationships. But with a text arc, you actually get to see how all those words are connected.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I love this stuff. And I know that you know this. I used it in my novel that I'm shopping out, Accidental Intelligence, that I'm shopping out to agents right now. And it was key for them figuring out something.
I'm not going to elaborate because spoilers.
Exactly. Exactly. I like text arcs. So anyway, pop-up archive. So we can turn podcasts into text arcs. I'm sure that's what Apple had in mind.
I'm sure that's exactly what they had in mind.
I wish Apple would buy TextArc and then make it into an actual app. Well, I wish someone would get a hold of this and turn it into something that's usable today.
That would be really cool. And when I brought up the website, mm-hmm. it looks completely unchanged from what I remember looking at it a decade ago.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised. It's so unchanged. I'm surprised that it's still online.
Yeah.
Right? Someone is paying for that. Yet it's not actually updating.
Let's see who's paying for it. I love doing Whois searches.
By the way, so another thing you can do is you can have the text arc actually read through the text. Mm-hmm. And then as the words and connections happen, they actually flare up and draw the lines between the connections in real time.
That's really
cool. It's super cool. It is super cool. I just launched the one for Hamlet. I don't think it works anymore.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. That is way too bad.
Well, just so you know, the owner of the TextArc domain, they really want to make sure this is around because they re-upped it at the beginning of this year.
Yeah, I wish someone would buy this and do something with it. It has so much potential for increasing our understanding of a lot of different things.
Well, I've got an email right here for who has the domain. You want to shoot him an email? Offer him $50 or something?
Maybe he's forgotten my being freaked out about my questions.
Could be.
You never know.
Well, not until you call him and get a restraining order against you.
Speaking of white rabbits, this hole.
This was a really cool hole
that I took us down. It's super dark and deep.
Yeah, but it's pretty awesome at the same time.
It is awesome. Yeah. See if the Alice in Wonderland works. I don't think these work anymore. Darn it. Man.
That's too bad.
Yeah, you need a 600 megahertz Pentium 3 or faster or a recent Mac.
You have a recent Mac?
I do. It requires Windows NT, Windows 2000, Windows XP, or Mac OS X. And you're going to need 256 megs of RAM.
Do you have 256 megs of RAM laying around?
I do, yeah. All Netscape right. 6.2 or later.
Uh-oh. I think I found the problem.
Yeah, I wish this worked. This is such a drag.
Yeah, that's too bad. Well, all right. Well, while you lament the slow demise of TextArc, how about mm-hmm. if I hit the button that gets us to wrapping up the show?
The slow demise of the Apple context machine.
That's the one.
The signals are slow demise. That's excellent.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our people have written this content. One of these days, I'm going to get this down. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly, Bases by Boom, recorded just for TMO. Our Facebook group, once again, as I hit the microphone, is my facebook.com/groups/context machine. That's all for this week.
I know having a microphone in your face is kind of a new thing. You'll get used to
it. It's a new thing. Yeah. I'm going to figure that out too.
Yeah. Hey, listeners, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.